Hello and welcome to Altamora's Festivals, the content series exploring how what's going on in the Edinburgh Festivals this August can show us some signals for what's coming next in entertainment and culture. My name is Nick Sherrod. I'm MD at Label Sessions and also a slightly reluctant futurist. And I'm also joined by our content producer, Joss Nixon. Joss, hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
So this week, or this episode rather, is a conversation that you had with Guillaume Piget. Mm-hmm. His show is called The Nature of Forgetting. It's on, just to get the details there, at the Pleasance Courtyard in the Grand, so big venue, 1:15 till 2:30 every day. A kind of really interesting show. Where would you sort of give it a kind of starting point from, Josh? How do you sort of walk people into this one?
So as Guillaume will walk you through once we get into the episode, so this is about a person called Tom. So he's living with early onset dementia, and the whole show is framed around his 55th birthday party and how he's preparing for that and thinking about all of the memories of his life coming up to that point.
Yeah.
And given the sort of dour subject matter, Guillaume actually had quite a sort of hopeful energy in the interview. And it's become a sort of recurring theme of a lot of the topics that we've discussed, is like a lot of these shows are about really serious things, but they come to it with a really sort of positive attitude.
Yeah.
And it's sort of idea of hope and the idea that, you know, the fragility of life is something that is talked about too, and that sort of one thing that I really loved about this is that Guillaume talks a lot about the sort of eternal something, that there's something that we all share, even with memory being gone.
Yeah. It's interesting. So we're getting quite close to the kind of findings. So there's, you'll pick up in some of the future episodes, there's quite a lot this year around memory and heritage, and kind of quite a few artists are reaching for those things as ways to state something that's almost political about now. There's a bit of that edge in The Nature of Forgetting as well, isn't there? I just feel like this is a story about dementia, but it's kind of about how people should be treated.
Yeah, 100%.
So let's dive in. So it's this is Guillaume. We will dive into the episode. We'll just do a quick conversation at the end too. But just a reminder for those of you who are going to be in Edinburgh this year, it's 1:15 in the Grand in the Pleasance Courtyard.
Yep.
Let's head in.
Well, Guillaume, thank you so much for joining me. I'd love to you just to kick off for me a little bit about, you know, this is a returning show. You know, you came to the Edinburgh Fringe in 2017, I believe, and now you come back for a second time. I know you've been touring the show for quite a long time too, and it's a fantastic show. It's fascinating to me, and I'd love for you just to explain to me a little bit about what audiences can expect this year, especially when you come into the Fringe for a second time.
What can audiences expect this year? Well, I mean, if you've seen the show, come again, because I think now we've been doing it for a while. You know, we've had, you know, we have more than 200 shows, performances on our belt. You know, we've digested what we've done. You know, it really makes sense. We make new connections with the imagination. You know, the pace is different. The cast is different. We're also going to be in a larger space. So if you've seen the piece before and enjoyed it, I think you're in for a treat, you know, because it's everything that it was before, but just more maturity. So that's really exciting. And if you have not seen the show, well, where have you been? if you've not seen the show, then it's really exciting because, you know, it's the piece where our style of theatre really came into its own, you know, bringing visual theatre with original live music. And I guess just to see that is exciting, just to see how we are able to, you know, take the audience through a journey, a very compelling journey, without saying a single word. I think it's very exciting.
Brilliant. And I've gotten a bit ahead of myself there. So I'd love for you just to explain to, you know, audiences who may not have caught it, and, you know, the people who have been under a rock, and sort of explain the top and tail of the show. It would be brilliant.
So The Nature of Forgetting is the story of Tom. Tom is a middle-aged father. He's 55, and he lives with his daughter, Sophie. Tom lives with early onset dementia, and it's his birthday. And so he needs to get dressed. And the feel of the clothes on the rack trigger memories. And at the top of the show, these memories come back intact. And you know, when we, you know, find out a bit more about Tom, about his life, about his school days and his friends and his family. And then as the show unfolds, these memories are becoming harder and harder to retrieve. And we sort of were introduced to to, you know, what is happening in Tom's mind as dementia takes hold, and has little by little, it's getting more and more difficult to retrieve these memories, to access these memories. So in a nutshell, that's what the show is about. And I guess, you know, I guess if you zoom out, for us, it's really about, first of all, it's about showing that when you live with dementia, you know, the memories don't disappear. They don't vanish. They're still there. They're just not accessible. And I think it's something that we're doing really well with the show, because it obviously it's so visual. We can actually show what's happening in someone's mind. Obviously, it's a leap of faith, but we're able to do that. And I guess it's also a reminder that, you know, the present time is very precious, and we should cherish it. And so we look at all these little life moments, and hope that we're being reminded that we should, cherish them and make the most of them while these moments happen, but also, you know, with those people at that particular time. That's what we're trying to achieve with the show.
Yeah, it's incredibly compelling. And the thing that really moved me a lot about it too is, you know, how you described it previously as, you know, the fragility of life, of course, but also that eternal something, that the light never really goes out, even though it's there. It's just you're stuck in that present rather than, you know, being able to develop a future and such.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I mean, what you're referring to is at the start of the process, of each of our productions, there's usually a question that sort of leads the exploration. And for The Nature of Forgetting, it was, what is left when memory is gone? What is left of an individual? That's actually a quote from an American playwright called Thornton Wilder. I don't know if you know of him. He's written a play called Our Town, which was very... we read it, we discovered it with the team when we were making the show, and in that play he gives an element of the answer, is that's something that we all share is eternal, and we all have that within us, and it's not the stars and it's not the houses, and it's an eternal something that no one can put words on. I just find that incredibly beautiful. And I think with The Nature of Forgetting, we're trying to get to the bottom of that eternal something that we all share, that all human beings share, that makes us who we are. So that's really important for us.
It's a really universal concept, and it's something that's really touching and affecting. And, you know, I was wanting to know a little bit more about, you know, I was referencing it before about this is your second time back at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. I'd love for you to talk us through a little bit more about, you know, why now, why here again?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, to be fair, we're asking ourselves, you know, we've been to the Fringe. It's going to be our sixth adventure to the Fringe. So we've been quite a few times. And every time, you know, we really question, you know, is this the best place for us to go? Is this the right moment? And every time we go back. So I guess it must be. I think this time we're going back because obviously the show has been successful across the world. You know, we've performed it in, you know, more than 20 countries, more than 200 times. And the responses across the world have always been so positive, you know. And I guess the aim for us is to try to go back and try to reach a wider demographic. We want to reach more people, and not just the very keen theatre goers or the very keen physical theatre lovers, or, you know, people who are really excited about experimental contemporary stuff, because obviously these people will be excited, and it's exciting for us to be able to sort of, you know, bring work for that audience. But I truly believe that our work and the work that we make as a company is really accessible in the widest sense of the word, in the sense that even if you have never been to the theater, you will connect with the themes of the productions and with the way we're portraying these themes. You know, everything is very visual, everything is very physical. The live music is really helping to connect and to allow the audience to resonate with the work in a very deep and intuitive way. You know, it's not abstract dance, it's not circus, it's nothing else but theatre, just theatre a little bit different, where we try to communicate our story and our stories, if we look at the other productions, in a different way, but in a way that talks to people in a very direct way. We all project our imagination into what we see all the time. And so with our work, we try to be very specific so that People can follow us on that journey and follow the journeys of the characters. But at the same time, that specificity needs to remain open so that we can all project our own world into what's being displayed on stage. So we're going back because we want to try to reach more people. And I think, I believe that there is a space for us. Dare we dream about, maybe the West End, having a longer run in the West End. We've been to Broadway before. We've had a run on Broadway and it went really well. So for us, it feels like there is a space, on sort of more commercial stages. Commercial as in, obviously, it'd be lovely to make money. but commercial as in reaching more people, making it accessible to a wider range of people, I think is why we're doing it. And that's why we're doing it in the ground, which is, the Pleasance emblematic venue. It's, nearly 800 seats. So it's a big space. And our show is a big show as well. But it'd be lovely for it to have that size, that breadth. That's the challenge for us. The challenge is, can we make that piece of work? Can we get more people to come and see that piece of work and our style of theatre? And as a result, encourage people to go to the theatre more often, because it is exciting, it is inventive, and it is accessible. So that's the game for us. That's our challenge.
Speaking of that, you talk about the challenge growing. How has it been for you sort of taking the show from its roots and sort of growing it as the, it's like you mentioned, the attendance count of the Pleasance Grand is 800 seats, and obviously it must have exceeded that in terms of Broadway as well. But what is the difference between like doing it in that original sort of preview run to where you see it today?
Yeah, I mean, so it's really interesting. When we were first devising the show, we collaborated with various groups of people, and so we went into care homes and collaborated with people who are struggling to remember, like older people. We interviewed people living with dementia. We collaborated with Dementia UK, the Alzheimer Society. So originally, in the first few stages of development, we were performing the show without lights, without theatre lights, in care homes. We've done a few care homes. We've done libraries as well. So a few non-theatrical spaces. And in these spaces, it's really exposing. It's really exposing. Obviously, we're missing the lights. But you're very close to the audience. You're very close to everyone. You can see everyone. And that's something quite daunting, but also incredibly exciting about being so close to these people. And then chatting with people afterward is always incredibly exciting in those settings because people are not prepared for an extraordinary theatrical experience in those spaces. And so that in a way was incredibly rewarding, to be able to touch people at that level, in those spaces, and being encouraged to then move to the next level. And then when we perform in sort of larger spaces, it's different. We can't see the audience in most of these larger spaces. Sometimes we're in sort of big auditoriums in China, and then you can't see everyone. It's so far away. But it's equally exciting because, we do come out at the end and we talk to everyone at the end of every show. And that's for us almost the most exciting bit. We've shared our work, and then we come out and we say hello, and we listen to how people have connected with the work in one way or another. And that's so rewarding. So even if we don't have that immediacy, that directness of connection when we're on stage, we get it at the end by coming out and chatting to everyone. So that's how we sort of make sure we're constantly in touch with our audiences.
Speaking of that connection to the audience, I was wanting to sort of open it up a little bit more and talk about, your thoughts on like the sort of the festival scene in the world and sort of like live performances in general. I'd love to talk to you a little bit about, what's exciting for you right now in the world of festivals and sort of live performances.
That's why we do it. we make shows to tour. We make shows to go out there and bring people together and share something and develop empathy through emotional connection. So we do it. We make theatre to tour, to share the work with as many people in as many locations as possible. We are constantly trying to, develop audiences. Once we go to a festival or a venue, we want to go again with a new show, with a different production, and connect with those people again and sort of carry on that conversation about the work. I think ultimately the work or the show that people come and see is an excuse. It's an excuse to connect. It's an excuse to come together, to share a moment together. And I think that's the strength of live theatre, and that's probably why it's never going to die, because nothing can replace that. People gathering in unconventional or conventional spaces, in traditional or non-traditional spaces, to share a moment together, to experience something together, you can't beat that. And so that's why we do it. That's why we do it. And what's really exciting for us is, whether we're sharing our work, you know, in South America or in Asia, is the fact that regardless of culture, languages, age, gender, the work seems to be touching and resonating with people everywhere. And it's so rewarding to just be reminded that at the end of the day, we're all human. We're all the same. We all have the same fears, the same desires, the same, you know, we all want to be loved, and we all want to love, and that's important, I think, in those days of international turmoil and chaos, to have that and to cling on to that. So that's why we do it.
And you know, thinking again of like the art form and what it is that brings you guys to it, what is it that, you know, is there anything that sort of scares you right now? Is there anything that you feel is like a sort of danger to the art form? Like, obviously, you know, like performance took a hit with COVID and such.
You know, theatre has been a struggling art form for the past, I don't know, 4,000 years. So we're always going to be struggling. And I think that, you know, the main struggle is funding. It's money, you know. There is not enough money, whether it's funding or private investment or income or resources, generally speaking, to create the work, to make the work at that level. You know, it's difficult to produce a piece of work at that level that has so much detail, that is devised, that is from scratch, and that is totally original, with a big cast. You know, there are very few companies like us in the UK who are able to sustain that and make that, and we're not receiving core funding either. So funding wise, it's incredibly difficult and challenging. And of course, we're trying to team up with venues and across the country, and those venues are incredibly helpful, but they're also struggling as well. So it's difficult for them to actually take a risk on a new piece of work without title. Like, we're not functioning on the back of a famous novel. We don't have a star in the show, or at least not at the level that it would need to bring an audience in on the strength of a name. So that type of work that doesn't rely on a celebrity, that isn't a famous movie, that isn't a famous recognizable title, is, I think, the most exciting work, and that's where theatre is really what it should be: inventive at heart and accessible, and that is at risk because people might not want to take a risk on it. So whether it's a venue, whether it's an audience member, so that is challenging. That is the challenge, but that's also why we want to do it. You know, that's also why we're going back to the fringe, is to show that actually some great work is possible. Some really exciting work that can only happen in the theatre is possible, and that is worth the battle. That is worth fighting for, and we're gonna make the case for it, and we're gonna keep doing it to constantly remind that nothing can beat that. That sort of communion, catharsis that happens in a theatre when people come together and the lights are going dark is pure magic, and I believe that, at least from the responses that we have, that The Nature of Forgetting and the rest of the work that we do as a company does that. So we're gonna keep at it.
And you know, speaking of that magic, is there anything in particular that's exciting you about August this year that's coming up?
I mean, I have the Fringe brochure just here. I'm going through it. It's little by little, but I haven't had the time to completely go through it. There are a few shows that I'm excited about. I'm really excited about, there's a show by a choreographer called Lea Trebasso, and it's called In the Bushes, and it's on at Summer Hall. I'm really excited about that. I've seen a version in London at the place already earlier this year, and it's her first time at the Fringe, so I'm excited. There's also, as always, so many exciting shows at the Pleasance. We're in the Pleasance Grand, And you know, we've got that really exciting relationship with the Pleasance, where they've seen us grow through the years. You know, we started in their smallest venue, and now we're in one of the biggest. I think the Pleasance is a really exciting venue to check for, you know, new talents and sort of people that the programming team is going to find and nurture for the next few years. That's really exciting. So I would definitely check everyone at the Pleasance. And then as soon as I have gone through this, then I'll be able to tell you a bit more.
Okay, so that was Guillaume Piget. His show is The Nature of Forgetting. It's at the Pleasance Courtyard in the Grand this year. So I mean, a kind of story that could be dark, could even be a bit depressing when you hear it, but actually there's a warmth to him anyway, but there's also a kind of hopefulness to that show, I think.
Yeah, there's more to life. It's that eternal something that we mentioned at the beginning and also for the interview too. And one thing that's to mention is that this is, I believe it's their second time at the Fringe with the show. And it's, you know, Guillaume's part of a big company called Theatre Re. And it's something that they've had a lot of experience doing, and it's quite interesting to see it from his perspective in that, as someone who's been in the realm of theatre for quite a long time.
Good. Okay, so that's that is Guillaume Piget. Follow along, there's loads more great episodes and actually quite a few coming up that pick up on this theory of, or this kind of idea of heritage and memory. So we will see you next time.